death in the family can be emotionally devastating and financially difficult. Walter Brown here for Kenmar Family Funeral Homes in West Mobile and Bayou La Batre. You've probably seen Al Kenmar or his three sons at community events, ballparks, or church. Let the Kenmar family help you plan a personal, lasting tribute to your loved one and carefully guide you through those many decisions. Here's what you do. Go ahead and go to their website, KenmarFamilyFuneralHome.com. Let their family help your family.
The Crawfish Music Festival is back for five big days. April 14th through the 18th. Enjoy the delicious hot-boiled crawfish, heart-pounding amusement rides, and live entertainment with performances by Riley Green, Hardy, Nico Moon, Blackberry Smoke, and many more. A limited number of general admission tickets are on sale now for only $25. Go to mscoastcoliseum.com today for your ticket to the 28th Annual Crawfish Music Festival, presented by Coca-Cola, Island View Casino, Bud Light, and K99 Country.
So I'm going to ask you guys a question so I can, like, shut all these ads off or all this stuff trying to go off. The one thing I hate is when you go to a website and as you're trying to read something or get into something, they start launching all kinds of crap at you, which makes you, here's an ad, here's another ad, oh, here's some kind of drug ad, whatever, or here's some kind of skin condition I don't have, thank God, or whatever, man, some kind of anal thing going on, whatever, man, leave me alone. These ads don't even pertain to me. I don't even know why they waste their money. I don't even think that they hit their core group. Only thing it does is turn me off to what they've got, so whatever, man. Welcome to the show. This is the paranormal news for this week. And I'll tell you, I like stories about ghost hunters that actually help people, you know, not the ones who they want to charge you a bunch of money for something or whatever. That's kind of something you got to stay away from, man. But the ones who help people. So this is a cool story that's in the paranormal headlines this week. Local paranormal group helps homeowner. You know, I like the little stories. I like the simple tales. So a family in Carbon County truly believes their home is haunted, and a new team aimed at getting rid of unwanted spirits was there to help. So Palmerton, Pennsylvania. Of course, it's Carbon County. Anything carbon or oil-based or whatever, you think Pennsylvania first. So ever since the Smith-Schultz family moved into their Palmerton home in June of 2019, they said they've experienced unwanted visitors in their home, and they are not the kind that you can get rid of easily. There's something in this house, it's not right. It's not nice. It doesn't feel good. So I said, let's just get a team out here. And lo and behold, we got ghosts, laughed Linda Smith. A lot of them, too. Okay. So High Spirits of Palmerton Paranormal is a local ghost hunter team, ghost hunting team. They do investigations and, you know, they check out your home for a kind of spiritual thing going on, activity, whatever. So in their video, you can see the family's basement and hear one of the group's investigators asking questions. Within seconds, a stick-like moving figure is captured by the ghost hunter's special equipment. Seconds later, it's gone. Founder and psychic medium Larissa Rex and her husband Alan started the group. The reason we got into it was to help people. Alan Rex said, that's why we do it for free. We don't charge anyone, but we're really genuinely there to help people answer questions that they might be wondering, you know, if they're having certain activities in their home or seeing things move or hearing things out of the blue. Rex tells Newswatch 16, by using their equipment, they were able to identify 12 ghosts in Linda's home. A blessing was completed on the home, and investigators said that they were able to cross over some spirits, bringing them to the next realm. We're grateful to the team, we really are, and seeing is believing, yes. And when you're going through it, sometimes you just think you're crazy or, you know, really, you're not. The High Spirits Palmerton Paranormal Teams understand that everyone believes, but they shouldn't rush to judgment. What I'm saying is to give an open mind to the evidence, look at the paranormal team, look at the webpage, and see that Like, we're not like other paranormal teams. See, they're kind of liking themselves like, hey, we're not like other paranormal teams. I will add things to that, okay? What I like about that is that they do it for the good of the goodwill of mankind and spiritualness, right? I mean, here they are doing it for free. They're out there. I mean, you know, the people I work with, we do the same stuff. And you know what? It's nice to help others. It's nice to be kind, nice to help people understand what's going on in their home. You know, are there other teams out there that are not up to par? Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, like with anything out in the world, you're going to have the good with the bad. You're going to have people who act more professional than others. You know, I mean, it really comes down to ability. You're also going to have people that'll bullcrap you and start trying to charge you money, you know, and whatever. And that's the kind of thing you just want to completely stay away from. But it's good to understand what's going on in your home. And I like the little ghost hunting groups out there because, you know, maybe every town doesn't have one, but probably every county has a couple of these paranormal groups, you know, especially now since it's more popular than ever for people to go out there and start seeking out maybe things that they were called to. Maybe they have an interest for it, but I like it, you know. And then my webpage on Facebook for Discovery Paranormal, you know, there's over like 3,000 individuals and groups on that page, all paranormal people, really, who have an interest in helping others, you know, move on. So, paranormal activity. Haunted Gilchrist County Jail is for sale. So, what do you think about buying a haunted jail? There's one in Owego, New York, and they've got like... they made them into apartments, you know, so you go in there and like you got the jail. I mean, you got the jail cell. Basically, you're moving into a jail, right? You've got bars on the windows. You got bars all over the place. Maybe if you're somebody who came out of prison and you're missing it, you know, that's the kind of thing you want to be if you don't want to go back in. Or if you're somebody who's like super weird, kinky, maybe you want to get into something like that. That's fine too, you know, but me personally, I don't like bars. I want openness. I want sunlight. I want stuff like that. So, but what about buying it? What about buying a haunted location and making it into an attraction? You know, that's the funny thing. And we were invited to this place a while ago called Rolling Hills, right? It's upstate New York. And I was at a ghost hunting convention run by this woman named Lorna. And it's funny. So my friend Pete and I were out there. We did the investigations together, and then, you know, we went to this convention just to meet people, basically, you know, other psychic medium types, or, you know, maybe get the line on other investigations. When it came to our investigations, though, we mainly got called into places where there was complaints, like people who are experiencing crazy stuff and they want an explanation. So like, just like that other group, we go in and we don't charge anything. And we just, you know, come in with a team and we do our thing and try to really get to the bottom of what's going on. So, but what about the haunted locations? What about these places? So we're going around this thing and we met this woman from Rolling Hills, and oh my freaking God, what a piece of work, man. Just, you know what? I don't like saying bad stuff about people, you know, but there are some people who are just plain miserable. And that woman was one of them. And, you know, I was like, what do you hope to accomplish having, you know, kind of like this haunted attraction that people come to? It's one thing if you have a bed and breakfast and it's haunted and people come there knowing that it's haunted. It's a whole different thing. And, you know, maybe spirits, you know, spiritual people have come and tried to move others on. Maybe not. But the reality is, when you dabble in things like that, you're opening up yourself to all kinds of stuff, you, your family, everybody you're associated with. It's a realm that is separated from our own realm, and there's a very thin veil that's between, and there's rifts and all kinds of stuff. But the what you're doing when you have, let's say you buy an insane asylum like Rolling Hills was, and this woman is basically telling anybody who comes in there, one, if you capture any evidence, you don't own it. It belongs to them, you know. And number two, It costs a lot of money. She's charging an arm and a leg to go through there because she says she has to maintain the building. Whatever, man. It's not like a B&B. It's something that is, I don't know. It's not a good exposure to the paranormal because those spirits there aren't happy. And she's like, you know, they're happy there. They're happy there. And I said, so what if we go in with our team and clean the place? And she got so freaking freaked out. She was freaked out. She was like, you better not do that. I wouldn't let you in the door now if you show up. I was like, how do you know that we even have to be there to clean the place? Maybe we can just go or just go outside. So we'll go outside in the parking lot and clean the place. Oh, this woman got mad. She said her ghosts are happy there. I'm like, how do you know they're happy there? These are earthbound entities. So whatever, man. So the jury's out when it comes to places that are haunted, like jails and whatever, and people buy them just to make it a haunted attraction. I don't think it's healthy. Anyway, so in this situation, this jail is is for sale in Florida, and it's $139,000. Hey, that ain't a bad price, man, for a situation like that, right? So it's a reasonable price, they say. It stands out for a Florida listing. Let's see. He's like, I have to say this is one of the most unique ones I've ever seen, says the listing agent, Matt Perry. It doesn't get much weirder than this one. He's tasked to sell the spooky property at 313 Northwest 2nd Street in Trenton, Florida, also known as the Haunted Gilchrist County Jail. It's been called the most haunted building in Florida. So right there, they're calling it, and I doubt it, that it's the most haunted because, you know, Florida has some incredibly, incredibly haunted places. A lot of misfortune has happened in Florida. A lot of blood has spilled in Florida for so many years for so many different reasons. So whatever, man. Is it the most haunted location? I don't know. I've never been there. So I'll say this. Well, this is the... When, I don't know, that's a big claim to make. Let's just say that, a big claim. All right. So the guy says, I've been there several times by myself, Perry says. I was obviously on high alert. I really just tried to be professional as I can be, but I never experienced anything. So the most haunted building in Florida, all of Florida, and the guy never experienced anything at all by himself. However, the moment the listing went live, the entire multiple listing service system in nearby Gainesville, Florida, crashed for a few hours. Ooh, his ghosts. Ghosts hacked the machine, man. You got ghosts in the machine. My little joke is the only thing that the spirits have done so far is that they broke the MLS when I tried to bring it live. Built in 1928, the building was used as a jail until 1968. Often, the prisoners spent the nights alone without a jailer, since a jailer's residence wasn't added to the property until 1966. I guess the people were kinder, gentler back then, right? The prisoners often got a little feisty, which they evidently still are. All the big time and really famous ghost hunter people have been there. Perry says they use trigger items like cigarettes and booze and money, which will really get the spirits going. And that's interesting, you know. It's important to bring certain things into the environment and kind of put it out there that might entice them. I've done exactly the same stuff on investigations, you know. But especially pouring a shot of schnapps, you know, for someone that was into peppermint schnapps, and I bought peppermint schnapps just for her, poured the shot, and they come around, man. They want their schnapps. So there are many videos and audio recordings of conversations and objects moving around when no humans are in the building. A paranormal enthusiast, Arlene Hale, has owned the property for several years. Perry says that Hale's husband bought it for her as a present. Isn't that nice? You know, talk about getting a nice present. Here's a haunted jail, honey. Ooh, Harold. Thank you. All right. So, and that time has come to her to find some other person to buy the building. She took on the task of introducing any paranormal occupants to the agent. Before I began doing anything, she insisted that she be the one to take the agent out there to show and introduce him to spirits. Perry explained, I went out there with her and I let her walk me through and explain them, the spirits, that I had no ill will and that I was going to simply bring them another Arlene, somebody that would love the jail like she did. We're just switching hands. So there you go. Maybe that's why he didn't have any paranormal experience. Maybe that's why the ghost didn't jump out at him when he was walking through there. For over a decade, Hale has hosted tours and monthly gatherings for ghost hunters. Perry says he plans to take a few prospective buyers and other listing agents to the next gathering. According to the listing, the property has 8 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Hey, no waiting, man. And the accommodations are Spartan, to say the least. There are actually 8 cells, all with plumbing, a toilet, and a sink. Perry says 5 are upstairs, the other 3 are downstairs. That's exactly what they are, their cells, he notes. There is an additional bathroom in the former jailer residence, which is more traditional and private. Perry admits that his first thoughts when he was approached by the listing agent was not pleasant. I envisioned myself handcuffed and locked into the cell and being tortured by ghosts. See, it's kinky stuff right there, man. That was probably the first thing I thought. Yeah, I've heard lots of ghost stories where they chain people up and beat them. Oh, God. Yeah, freak. So after he settled down, he had an epiphany. I started to realize there's a buyer for everything. His epiphany was cash. It was big dollar. 6% or 3%, whatever the hell it gets. Cash, boy. Haunted or not, sell it. Sell, sell, sell. I became excited about the possibility of the reach that I could get and how exciting it was going to be to speak to people who had different ideas and different plans. It was a little scary at first, but it just became more and more exciting. Something I never thought I'd be compelled by has compelled me. Although the building sits on a nice parcel of land, Perry says he doesn't see the jail being converted into a single family home. Imagine raising kids in a jail, man. You know, hey kids, good night. Going to jail. Good night in your cell. At least you know where they are. Lock them in there at night. I think the perfect buyer for the property is going to be somebody with incredibly open minds that can see the potential, all while the beauty of what's there, he says. I think somebody that really has a connection to tourism and tourism-related business, somebody really creative, and somebody that understands the draw and the comedy and the entertainment that is involved with the haunted building. Ha, 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 comedy. Oh, yeah, it's funny as hell. Haunted buildings. Hysterical. You know? Laugh and laugh and laugh. Oh, my God. Those people in there that suffered and died, this guy's all like, oh, it's whimsical. Little tale. Okay, that's my comment on the guy. You know, the one who is now massively excited. You better watch out. Some of those ghosts are going to come home with them. They're going to have a whole different ha-ha moment going on. All right. Another headline that caught my eye. A haunting tale. So a clerk that works in the Mattapoisett Town Hall and wants to talk about all these ghosts, and these people went in there to interview him. So Mattapoisett, a town hall, is peopled by clerks, accountants, coordinators, and other municipal employees. Mattapoisett Town Hall also has a prankster poltergeist named Abner, employees claim. I know I sound like a crazy person. See, I love hearing that as a paranormal investigator because it makes me feel less crazy or that the... I don't know. I'm willing to listen and believe people, but they're the ones putting out the story. Maybe 3% less. It puts me in the zone of a little bit less. Just because I'm willing to explore and I have that mental open, you know, mind type of thing. All right. Or maybe it makes me more crazy. I don't know. Yeah, that's probably it. So, But I know I sound like a crazy person here, man, said said Barbara Gasper. It's a chick. I know I sound like a crazy person here, man. And she works as an assistant clerk at the Mattapoisett Town Hall for decades. But you know, that's okay. Sometimes I think I'm crazy. Ah. And she ran out with her hands up in the air. Ah, I'm not crazy. Gasper, you know what? Back in the day, my psychiatrist told me that if you think you're crazy, you're not crazy. Right after he said that, he jumped out the window. But I'll tell you something. I completely agree with him. So Gasper, who was a history of seeing spirits, who has, you know, has a history of seeing spirits as a child, says the immediately sensed a male spirit as she first entered the building. I knew he was there. Gasper is convinced it's Abner Harlow, a town clerk from 1912 to 1917 and 1924 to 1946. What the hell did he do between 1917 and 1924, I wonder? So according to Gasper, Harlow was known for being very disorganized. Bad, bad clerk. Thus, she says, he liked to play practical jokes on the staff. He would get things done in the office and go back the next day and not be able to find it. He said sometimes they would show up, she said. Sometimes they would not. If you were working there at night, you could hear him moving upstairs, even though you knew that you were alone in the building. Ooh, footsteps upstairs. I love that. Mattapoisett Town Clerk Catherine Huberger confirms Gasper's story. I'd be in the bathroom and you swear that you hear someone. She said, it sounds like someone came in the front door and then they were just looking at you sitting on the toilet, watching you do your business. She didn't say that. I just added that in there because I'm a freak. She said, it sounds like someone came in the front door and that they were walking down the hall or whatever. See, mine was better, wasn't it? Then you come out and there's like nobody there. Nobody there. Ugh. Look at the paneling in that building. Ugh. Ugh. They use some of that big tax money to put some new stuff up. Huberger says, that's my fashion tip for them, you know. Angley's fashion advice. Your ghostly fashion advice. Huberger says that's about the extent of her run-ins with Abner. However, her only other explainable story is when a shelving unit filled with supplies that's meant to hold up 200 pounds mysteriously collapsed one morning. Ooh, that doesn't sound very nice. You know, little mischief type of stuff. It sounds like damn dangerous. It looked to me like someone picked up everything and just tossed it, Huberger said. I've always wondered. So, Gasper has that story beat. She remembers in 2004 preparing for the absentee ballot envelopes, filled out and ready to be mailed. The staff put them in a vault and came back the next day to discover that they were gone. Several people saw us and to the best of my knowledge, they have not turned up since. So she said that they were forced to do it all over again. When they put the box in the vault the second time, Gasper wrote on the box, Abner, these are important. Please do not touch them. And they were thankfully there the next day. He's not obnoxious or would do anything major. He didn't attack anyone yet. And he's a good guy, she said. She has to say that. She's probably sitting right in there when she said it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, sitting in front of somebody that you can't stand, but you got to say something nice about him anyway. And you're like, hey, he's a good guy. He's a good guy, Abner. She said, I would often talk to him and as if I were there alone, but I'd say, okay, don't startle me. I'm here alone. I know you're here. We both have to work here. She said, see, instead she started like just like bitching at him. Like, listen, you better do my job. Make him give a whole bunch of tasks. Better do a good job. You get fired. He'd kick you out of this building. Be out in the street with ghosts. Then he'd be like, ooh, oh, she's mean. Some call her ghost the lady. Oh, some call her the ghostly. Gasper was born in New Bedford and grew up in Fairhaven. When I was 4 and a half, my father passed away, and I've been seeing him since. She remembers living at her grandparents' house and knowing it was haunted. I kind of grew up knowing. So, yeah, she's sensitive, you know. She's sensitive. There's a picture of her. Oh, yeah. She looks like that little, she looks like that woman from the Poltergeist, man. The dwarf from the Poltergeist. Carol Ann. She's got that exact look going on. Same clothing and everything. Gasper graduated from Bridgewater State with a major in secondary education with a concentration in history and social sciences. She worked as a substitute for the old Rochester Regional High School and came to be referred as the ghost lady, even in the school. She must talk about it a lot. I would make a deal with the class. If they did the work they were supposed to do, I would stop the class for 10 or 15 minutes and tell them some true ghost stories, and they loved it. Heuberger confirms firsthand. She said she was actually my Girl Scout leader, Heuberger said. The ghost lady's the Girl Scout leader. She taught me a lot and basically took me away for my first overnight trip with a bunch of girls. On their first camping trip, Heuberger remembers Gasper told ghost stories around the campfire. She scared the bejesus out of me, she admitted. That's always been her thing. Though I've questioned whether she told me these stories in the fourth grade. I was pretty scared. Terrorizing little children. Fourth grade is young, man. Tell us some bloody ghost stories. Gasper is now working as a freelance seamstress. She has helped with costuming a few high school drama clubs, including the Rhode Island School of the Deaf's drama group. See, she's giving back to her community, man. That was my first love. That was a blessing that was given to me. And, you know, I feel like I have to do what she said. Awesome, man. Seamstresses are very hard to find right now, and the prices are astronomical, she added. I just do the little things that I can for very, very. She'd make Abner do it. Yeah. Give him a new job. Seamstress. Ghostress. Seamstress. Inviting the ghost hunters, Gasper wishes that the New England ghost hunters could do an overnight at Town Hall to experience Abner. She said that she asked the former administrator for permission, and he thought she was nuts. She hasn't asked yet. she hasn't asked recently. They have a new administrator, Michael Lorenko. Isn't he proud his name's in the paper like that? Because he started in March of 2020. So the first day of the COVID-19 lockdowns, and no one's been really doing anything, really. He's working hard to make the community safe for COVID-19, she said. I didn't want to lay a ghost on him at that point. So she said she did. See, that's when you do lay the ghost on. When someone's super busy like that, and they got that COVID going on, and they're fighting COVID-19, and then you throw that ghost thing at them, and the building's empty anyway, of course they're going to say, oh, okay. you're right. Whatever. No time for this. It's when they're sitting there doing nothing. That's when they got time to think. You don't want to give people time to think. What the hell's wrong with you? She said that she did work with the New England Ghost Hunters several years ago when they did an overnight at the Massapoisett Library, which is also rumored to be haunted. Gasper said that they didn't find anything. I thought those guys going there, I'm thinking those Roto-Rooter guys, man. Roto-Rooter, that's the way, and the ghosts, blah, 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 blah. Gasper said that there was a big debate in the town about adding a new addition onto the library because they didn't have enough money and felt like it should go towards school repairs. They should let the ghost build it, man. The former library director, Judy Wallace, worked hard to get donations and support of the new addition approved. Okay. Unfortunately, she died right after the new additions were built. Oh, that sucks. Gasper said when she was with the ghost hunters that in that section of the library, one of them asked why there were so many people against it, and the spirit box printed out several dollar cent icons. Oh, money, money, money. Even on the other side, it's all about the money, right? So she said, I mean, you know, not everybody believes. I would like to have the New England Ghost Hunters come in and do it. So how to handle Abner? A few people currently working in the town hall who have asked to remain anonymous said that they were aware that there was potentially a ghost amongst them. One employee confirmed that they've heard footsteps over their head on the second floor again, despite knowing that they were the only ones in the building. So basically, you got a little haunted location going on. It's got a ghost. I wouldn't think of an Abner. Maybe it's the guy. Maybe it's not the guy. The thing is with spirits, you don't know. And a lot of times they misrepresent themselves, you know. So it's something that you just have to look out for. And it's intuition. It's the feeling. It's in your gut. You know, there are people, ghost hunting groups that run into children all the time. And, you know, much of the time they're not children. Much of the time that they are misrepresenting themselves, so you think that they are, so you bring them in, or you bring them with you, and you invite them in, you know. We were doing a place, this house called the Taylor House, man. It's actually called the Taylor House in Lyons, New York. Big 8 or 9,000 square foot building. I mean, the main house, and there's a community center that was attached to it. And we've been there multiple times, you know, and the last time we were there, we brought three, you know, one psychic, two great psychic mediums. Cindy Thompson was one of them, and you know, Nicole Wright was the other. Amazing. Well, I mean, we captured it all. It's actually on YouTube. If you go to don't do it now because I want you to listen to the rest of the show, but youtube.com/discoveryparanormal, and then you know, you look for these episodes, but also look for the Eerie Mansion. That one was really interesting too. But I'll tell you, it's you got to put it together. It's a whole thing, you know, that you put together. It's a story, and you have to know the names, and like that woman knew Abner and whatever. They had some history. They knew who to call out to, but you don't know. And like the people who mess with Ouija boards, for instance, and or, you know, reading books and whatever and stuff, you want to open up some kind of door, open up some kind of rift, and then let in whatever. You don't know what you're letting in. You know, it's not your Grandma Sally who's coming to visit. You know, it could be anything and anything and anything. So, and we've been in situations like that, but, you know, so like when, you know, Peter Canellis and I, we went out and did investigations like way in the beginning. We went to the Taylor House. I think that was our second or third place that we went to. And it was like right there early on. And we ran into this entity that was calling itself Cahill. It was a kid. And we actually heard his voice. I mean, I got EVPs. Extensive conversations with this kid. You can really hear him talking a whole bit. I mean, you know, it's fascinating, actually. You know, and when we went back a few months later, there was a kid he said he was Cahill, but he wasn't him. That's the name, Cahill. He actually said that in our recorder. But it wasn't him. It didn't feel like him. It didn't even sound like him, really. So, and then there was another voice at the same time saying, Cahill loves you. Cahill wants you to take him home. Just like that. I mean, I have him to this day. I got these EVPs. And you listen, it's like, oh, my God. I didn't hear it live. You know, obviously, we're just sitting there asking questions. And, you know, you check your evidence later on. At that time, I couldn't do real-time conversations. You know, now I can. You know, with technology, it just grew and grew and grew. And then, you know, if you know how to piece things together, you can actually create systems to do all kinds of stuff in the paranormal world, scientific equipment on top of it. Anyway, but yeah, you listen to that type of stuff and you're like, wow, you know, and there's no way I'd be like, yeah, come home. In fact, when we leave a place, we basically clean ourselves and, you know, tell them stay there and whatever, man. But you never know, man. You pick stuff up. So talk about picking stuff up. I like talking about Bigfoot because the jury's out, way out for me. I'm not such a big believer, even though I know people that do fully, wholly, 100% believe in Bigfoot. That's good. Until you can disprove something, you really don't know. I think much of the time they're mistaking a skunk ape for the Bigfoot. I would think that if there were such a creature it would have to have some kind of community to keep going and exist. You know, there would have to be little baby Bigfoot and whatever, you know, mama, papa, Bigfoot, that type of thing. And it's doubtful in this day and age of explorers, cameras, drones, planes, helicopters, bush pilots, that this thing could, you know, these things could exist without, especially without a community. All right. So that's me. But hey, I'm not always right. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to read this to you. Salt Lake City. So this guy is putting out this Bigfoot, a large statue of a creature in Coral Pink Sands Dune State Park. And let's see. The statue is placed in hidden locations within the state park's boundaries. If you come across him, be sure to take a selfie. You know, so this guy put these Bigfoot out there. So just like the Bigfoot statue will roam periodically, just like the Bigfoot, the statue will roam periodically. So it's never in the same place twice, park ranger Patrick Burr said. So this guy's kind of a little poking fun a little bit, putting his Bigfoot out there, you know. And these Bigfoot groups are getting pissed off because they're like, hey, man, you're going to summon the Bigfoot, you know. Summons the Bigfoot. Isn't that what you want? You know, you want some kind of evidence. You want to maybe capture the thing, do something. So, now Burr said in a prepared statement, coral pink is unique because we have a little bit to offer everyone. We have amazing campsites, miles off the highway, vehicles riding on the dunes, dark skies, hiking, and even sandboarding. So he's using it as what originally the original guy in Tennessee who created the Bigfoot craze, that he owned a shop, like a little grocery, an antique junk store. He made these feet out of plaster of Paris. He went around putting them all around. A hunter saw them, and then that was the beginning of the Bigfoot craze. But Bigfoot people will argue with you that, hey, you don't know what you're talking about, man. I love that. You don't know what you're talking about, man. It is Bigfoot. But now people are mad at this guy for putting the Bigfoot around because he's kind of using it as the attraction. But that's what it was to begin with, right? Isn't that what it is? So now to find Bigfoot, you either have to go to the deep, 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 deep woods, probably Canada, right? If I was Bigfoot, I don't know, Canada's kind of cold though. I wouldn't be the type of Bigfoot that would like the cold. In fact, no. Forget the cold, man. If I was Bigfoot, and I do have size 15s, so I think I qualify to be big. I'm 6'5" with size 15s. I qualify, man. I'm just not hairy, but that's okay. I'm a smooth Bigfoot. they see smooth, naked Bigfoot run through the woods. I used to go up to this place. I'll tell you, man, this place called Connecticut Hill, which isn't far from me, and a big wilderness type area in upstate New York, you know. And it's a protected area too, a lot of whatever, there's even bear up there, that type of stuff. So I'd go up there on nice big full moons and like just kind of get naked, run through the woods. It's just something that I enjoy to do time to time, you know. And I often think, like, you know, someone's going to see me one day and think, like, it's a big, big naked Bigfoot running through the woods. I saw him. He's naked. He's naked Bigfoot. But you can't get mad when someone hoaxes. All right, it's like the crystal skulls, all right? Now, the crystal skulls that people brag about. I got into this conversation when I first got online, and there this person had, like, this spiritual group, and they had – it was like a cult, actually, like drink the Kool-Aid type of people. They had a crystal skull that they claim – was connected to aliens and this and whatever and spirits and the Aztecs and, you know, it's the vibe of Uranus and all that is going to pick up in this thing. I'm a ba-bat. So me as an investigator, I don't automatically red flags go off in my head because these crystal skulls all came about at the same time in the late 1800s in shops in Mexico that sold all types of stuff, right? They have never been a crystal skull that was discovered in an archaeological dig Now, that's important to think about. Like, okay, how did they get from the aliens' spiny little hands, or the Aztecs' spiny little hands, or Uranus's, you know, spiny little Uranus, to the shops in Mexico for them to claim that they're spiritual and they sell them? So anyway, in back in the day with digital cameras, you know, they're like 1 megapixel, pretty pathetic, you know, little megapixel camera. And if you took a picture and you moved the camera slightly, you'd get that mirrored image, you know, just like infinity type of image going up, because that's just the crappiness of the camera and whatever, also depending on the lighting. So this person took a picture of the skull, and they had that blah, 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 blah going on, and put it on. It was MySpace, actually. They put it on MySpace. And then all these people were like, oh, my God, it's so spiritual. I can feel the light. I can feel it. Oh, my God. And I was like, you got to be flipping kidding me. If you guys are that crazy, I don't want nothing to do with you. You know what I mean? Like, there's people like that. They are out there, man. They are out there. And then there's people who just, you can give them all the evidence in the world, they don't want to believe it. I can show you pictures of ghosts, people that will not believe it. And that's, it is what it is. I got pictures of full body apparitions. You can see their eyeballs and everything, basically. Almost. Where their eyes are, anyway. Eyebrows. How's that? Fingers. How's that? It is what it is, too, man. So, there are people out there that do have real Bigfoot encounters. And some of it's wanton. You know, maybe some of those Canadian chicks up there with their big wampin' stick want a Bigfoot to hang around. You know what I mean? Make them either utility. Got Bigfoot going up, chopping wood outside, teaching how to do stuff. You know, and they got a smell. Let me tell you, man, we were doing this ghost hunt in the woods at this cabin. And the reason why we went there is because this hunter and his son was coming out of there. And the hunter actually got stuck in some kind of energy vortex or whatever. He couldn't move. And his son tried to yank him loose. And then he got stuck. I was fascinated by that. It was right by this really old bombed out cabin, like from the late 1700s, like a lot of history there, you know? So we go there. And then as we're there doing this investigation, you know, Josie Berardi Wright comes, she brings Nicole and some other women or whatever. A whole bunch of women showed up, which, you know what? You never bring 5 women on a ghost hunt, man, unless they're really professionals. Those guys were talking and talking and talking. So, like, you know, we're trying to do this investigation, and all we hear is, like, people yakking away. I was like, you know, and I tell them, like, 15 times, be quiet. Josie's professional. Those other girls, I don't know what was going on. So then all of a sudden, we smell this really horrible smell, and we heard these branches breaking and all this other stuff in the woods. And these girls are like, oh, what is that? I'm like, it's a bear. You can smell it, you know? If you're downwind of a bear, oh, my God, man, they got a scent. And we actually, on a hunting cam, before we did the investigation, went out there and put a hunting cam just on the cabin to see if we would get something, you know, over those next few days. We got the bear. So I knew there was a bear around there. You know, Pete had a pistol on him, and I don't know, I had some in my car. I wasn't really that worried, you know? I think I could run faster than those guys anyway, and you know, as long as you know you can run faster than people you're with, man, you're kind of okay. You're okay. But this woman, here we go. This is up in Maine, Portland, Maine, right? It was a perfect day for fishing, rising trout. I love who writes. You know, people who write these articles, like sometimes they're writing a novel, you know? I love that, man. Like, they got too much of an education. Now they're writing some crappy article for some crappy thing online. It was a perfect day for fishing. Rising trout dimpled the smooth, dark waters of Green Pond in Morrow Plantation. Jeff Kane savored the day, floating and casting until nearly dark. It was one of his favorite spots in all of Aroostook County. And Kane had angled trout there at least a dozen times before. Around 7 p.m., a deep, angry, resonant roar exploded across the water. Roar! The sudden blast left Kane frozen in fear. Oh! Every hair in his body was standing straight up when the howl finally ended. A full 5 seconds later. 5 seconds! 5 seconds! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's not a long time. Maybe it is. Depends. It depends on how you react in certain situations. I was freaked out as hell, Kane said. I never heard any animal sound like that before. This is how I believe you sound, right? And no human could ever replicate what I heard that evening. That was May 2007, and he hasn't been back since. Aren't the trout happy? The frightening encounter is one of many chronicled in two new projects exploring the enduring legend of Bigfoot in the Pine Tree State. Author Michelle, is it the Pine Trees? I thought Maine was called Vacation Land, which I have no idea why, because almost nobody would ever go there for a vacation. It's not even inhabitable, most of it. So author Michelle Soulier, her new book, Bigfoot in Maine, is due out in May. Published by the History Press. Filmmaker Nathaniel Presslin's independent documentary Eyes from the Pines, The Pine Ape Project, is slated for release this summer on YouTube. Both book and film trace the lengthy history of the local Bigfoot tale from traditional Native American stories to contemporary run-ins like Kane. They will also examine the explanations and why such tales abide, despite the complete lack of photographic evidence. All right, let me read that sign again. That line, despite a complete lack of photographic evidence. So, which word didn't you understand? Soulier's forthcoming book, I Don't Have a Picture, is not her first dive into extraordinary Maine stories. She previously published the Strange Maine Gazette newsletter, and a one-page broadsheet was dedicated to the odd antique local tales. Soulier, who owns the Green Hand Bookstore in Portland, also wrote a book of short history pieces. Of course, she has all this time to write. She owns a bookstore in Portland. Really? Got lots of time on her hands looking for some Bigfoot. And she's never seen a Bigfoot. My specialty is anonymous Maine history. The stuff that slips between the cracks. The stuff that isn't in the history books, you know. Bigfoot's story in Maine begins with ancient Wababaki, traditional stories about the giant man-like creature known as the Wendigo. Wendigo. I like that better than Bigfoot. Wendigo. You know, much better than Sasquatch, too. I'm going to go for Wendigo. Wendigo's got a Winnebago, man. So the Wendigo, who frequents the Maine woods, the beast is said to possess the bodies of humans, turning them into cannibals. Later 18th century white settlers told of a forest wild man who killed and dismembered trappers and hunters. The first accounts of what we might think as the classic Bigfoot began in the late 1800s, and now defunct weekly paper, Waterville Sentinel, published a story in 1886 about a 10-foot-tall, hairy, muscled creature who killed a man camping 100 miles north of Moosehead Lake. So that's
a death in the family can be emotionally devastating and financially difficult. Walter Brown here for Kenmar Family Funeral Homes in West Mobile and Bayou LeBattery. You've probably seen Al Kenmar or his three sons at community events, ballparks, or church. Let the Kenmar family help you plan a personal, lasting tribute to your loved one and carefully guide you through those many decisions. Here's what you do. Go ahead and go to their website, KenmarFamilyFuneralHome.com. Let their family help your family.
The Crawfish Music Festival is back for 5 big days. April 14th through the 18th. Enjoy the delicious hot-boiled crawfish, heart-pounding amusement rides, and live entertainment with performances by Riley Green, Hardy, Nico Moon, Blackberry Smoke, and many more. A limited number of general admission tickets are on sale now for only $25. Go to mscoastcoliseum.com today for your ticket to the 28th Annual Crawfish Music Festival, presented by Coca-Cola, Island View Casino, Bud Light, and K99 Country.